Often vulgar, always explicit, and sometimes funny.
Slap box. Slap box.
Welcome to the Slapbox Podcast. This is episode 673. I am your host, Josh Albrecht, recording once again in the inside the Slapbox penthouse. My trusty sidekick, Agent Fox Mulder, the three-legged kitty cat. I was going to say it was right beside me, but he just went over to the window. He's checking out what's going on outside the old penthouse. Yes, it's been only a week since the last show, but it seems like so much has happened in the last week. There's plenty of shit going on in the world, but just that I've done so much, I guess, in the past week. I did, of course, stream Ozzy's last concert. Black Sabbath, and I guess Ozzy's last concert. Now, granted, I am aware Ozzy has, and Black Sabbath have already had their final tours, and shows before. It's like every Black Sabbath show for the last, 20 plus years has been, the final one, right? They had the Last Supper at Ozfest, they did the last tour that Black Sabbath did, which I guess was their last tour. I mean, this was just one show. This is a one-off. Their last tour was called The End, though it was missing the original drummer, of course, Bill Ward, the great Bill Ward. But I streamed the final concert off their backtothebeginning.com. Calm down, Fox. He's got a little bit before he gets fed. He might be irritable, shall we say. Anyway, I had paid for it ahead of time. I ordered for the shirt. This is already not right. I just looked it up. I was trying to find the largest live stream concert. Now, this has got to be this. Ozzy's last show has to be it, because before that wasn't even a million. From what I understand, there was something like 5 million people that streamed the Back to the Beginning concert. which I'm trying to... Let's see here. Back to the Beginning concert. Here we go. That's what I wanted to know. here it says 190 million for charity. Well, I think I read somewhere it was over 200 million. But man, that is, I did a wine run in the morning. I skipped the wine part. Just did the run. I guess I just did a group run in the morning. I had skipped that, and I was planning on watching the concert. It says here, streamed by over 5 million fans. I ended up not I was already a couple hours late to the party. It was 9 or 10 hours for the whole concert, because it was it was an all day event, and I didn't immediately start. I didn't know exactly how the live stream was going to work. I thought I could already go back. You know, I'm used to a lot of live stream things where you can already just watch the beginning of it. Guess I'm a bit spoiled. But I didn't get it started right away. And then when I got home, I was going to redo the drywall. That was my other big thing for last Saturday, because I did the show on 4th of July, I guess. Yeah. Shit. It was so long ago now. It seems like so much longer than a week. I was going to redo the drywall in the hallway downstairs so I can finish the movie theater in the downstairs, you know? And I cut, again, I didn't immediately start streaming the concert. Fun fact, when I started, eventually got around to it, I realized you couldn't go back, at least while the concert was still going. But anyway, I cut the old pieces of drywall out and then got a hold of Jackman because they had some scraps from redoing two sons' bedrooms, completely redoing the electric, and tore out all the drywall and put new drywall up. And he had a bunch of scraps I could use so I wouldn't have to buy drywall. So I just went to go get the scraps, you know, and then I'd figure out, I was like, you know, I've only taped like once or twice before. definitely, I don't remember. I mean, I probably helped out in some corners before, but I mean, we're talking like well over a decade ago. I knew I probably wouldn't do a very good job of it, but I was like, let's just watch a couple of YouTube videos. Let's roll the dice here, see what happens. And then Jackman just ended up coming over and doing it. He had all the stuff still out for doing the drywall, since he had drywalled the two rooms. And so he just came over and you know, it was really awesome. He just... you know, I guess I helped him a little bit, but pretty much he did it. And he's come over throughout the week and finished doing the coats of mud and whatnot. And last night, I, because he already had the drywall stuff here, I was like, well, I might as well finish the upstairs. So I cut out the shit and the upstairs in the room I'm recording in, which that one is a real tricky area. There's several corners that meet up and a little tricky. It was fun tearing it out too. That was so much fun. That's not sarcasm at all. but anyway, yeah. So because of the drywall got in all wrapped up in that, didn't get to start streaming. I didn't start streaming the concert until quite a few hours into it. And so initially I had missed a lot of the shows, so I didn't get on to, which again, I thought, you know, I wasn't too concerned about seeing every act, but I wanted to see a lot of it. I mean, there's a lot of good bands there. I was a little saddened when I got it up that I did realize that like during the concert, at least I couldn't go back and watch. Because I started streaming it, Guns N' Roses had just taken the stage, and I should admit, definitely not an Axl Rose fan, not a big GNR fan. I mean, I respect Slash. He's got, you know, he did bring back the Les Paul, from what I understand. I mean, Gibson was on its death, you know, it was doing its death rattles, I guess, at the time. At least with the Les Paul. Nobody was buying fucking Les Pauls when, like, Appetite for Destruction had come out. Like, nobody was. And then once that comes out, hits the stage, which, again, fun fact, Slash's first Les Paul, when Guns N' Roses got big, I mean, that wasn't a real deal. Holyfield, Gibson, that was, it was a fake Gibson. But, I mean, from what I understand, it's a well-made... It wasn't a Chibson. It was, I want to say, somebody in L.A. that had made this guitar. I forgot the story behind it. But, again, not a real Gibson, but Slash and Guns N' Roses just like becoming huge, like reinvigorated the Les Paul, from what I understand. Or at least he's credited to that, you know. Man, I would find it hard to believe that Gibson would have went under, or at least the Les Paul would have disappeared had Slash not repopularized the Les Paul. But anyway, I mean, I do like Welcome to the Jungle and stuff. It takes me back to a moment in time, a long, long time ago. But Axl Rose can't sing for shit now. I guess in the early days of Guns N' Roses, like, he had decent stuff, but, you know, he really can't sing now. It was pretty bad. I would say Axl was the most disappointing of the acts. The rest of the band sounded fine. Axl did not. The only time I remember anything else too, like as far the quality of the live stream, which, fun fact too, it was also pretty awesome watching that concert on the projector. Felt almost like I was there. Still not as good as going to a real fucking concert, but pretty awesome. I did enjoy the overall experience of it. The only other act that I can think that was on there that I think had some real issues was whoever the fuck was running the sound for Alice in Chains. I've forgotten the name of their new lead singer. It seemed fine when he was singing, but what the fuck is the guitarist and also, like, I guess, sometimes lead singer. See, Lane Staley's the one that died, right? I'm blanking. I know the fucking name, god damn it. Jerry Cantrell. There we go. let's see here. Find out the name of the other fella. William Duvall. That's the new guy, the new singer. He seems all right. But I'm not like a huge Alice in Chains fan, but that's Cantrell, though. I mean, man, shit, yeah, his guitar, you know, that sound of wow, is pretty fucking iconic. Pretty iconic. anyway, but whenever Lane Staley's dead. Jerry Cantrell. Whenever Jerry Cantrell was singing, it would make sense that you wouldn't hear Lane Staley. You know, whenever he was singing, it was silent. whenever Jerry Cantrell was singing, a lot of times you couldn't hear him. Thinking whoever was running sound was not doing a great job on Jerry. You could hear his guitar. Great. That was like loud and out in front, which should be. I mean, when I think Alice in Chains, I think of that Jerry Cantrell's guitar. I mean, that is, he's using the voice box on a lot of it and stuff, and that's some solid stuff. But, yeah, again, just other than those two really things, I thought everybody did just a bang out job. It was a fantastic. I mean, I was really, let's see, oh, actually here, I got a article on consequence.net. Let's see if it's got anything interesting on, oh, it's a very brief. This is John Hadusek says, not only was Black Sabbath and Ozzy Osbourne's Back to the Beginning concert a triumphant finale for the heavy metal legends, but it was also a lucrative one. Per a report by The Guardian, the live stream for Sabbath's final show was streamed by over 5 million fans worldwide, with digital tickets for the stream going for $30. That equates to roughly $150 million. While proceeds from the concert itself were set to go to charity, it is unclear whether the same is true for the revenue from the live stream, which was on a two-hour delay. The massive farewell gig at Villa Park will stand as one of the greatest single events in metal history. During the show, Ozzy sang and performed four songs with Black Sabbath, War Pigs, Iron Man, NIB, and Paranoid, and five numbers with his solo band, I Don't Know, Mr. Crowley, Suicide Solution, Crazy Train, and ballad Mama, I'm Coming Home. Yeah. But anyway, yeah. I think one of the coolest moments for me, personally, that I really thought the there was a moment, or of course Tom Morello like coordinated the thing, and from what I understand was like getting all the bands together to perform here, and was doing a lot of stuff, I believe, behind the scenes of like you know, helping just plan out how everything's gonna go down. Anyway, Tom Morello, of course, the guitarist for Rage Against the Machine and Audioslave, as well as Prophets of Rage, and his own solo work with like Night Watchmen, and the artist behind my signature guitar with my Tom Morello Strat. anyway, Tom Morello had the, a couple of times they had the Tom Morello All-Stars, which it was just, you know, like super groups basically of band members. And, my favorite of those little All-Star groups was, which I know that they came out and did Judas Priest's, Breaking the Law. I forgot what Black Sabbath song they covered, 'cause like every band, pretty sure like pretty much every band covered a Black Sabbath song that performed that day. I could be wrong on that. But part of the deal, you're honoring the greatest metal band of all time. You gotta respect. But of course, my favorite Tom Morello All-Star act was had Billy Corgan on vocals, Tom Morello, of course, on guitar, K.K. Downing, the original Judas Priest guitarist, who was rocking the wah on, of course, Breaking the Law, which is great fucking Priest song, great fucking song. And one Mr. Adam Jones from fucking Tool, Rudy Sarzo, and then another Tool member, Danny Carey, on drums. And it should be noted, okay, I've got on my Mount Rushmore of guitarists, which I believe I've mentioned a few times on this show, you know, the four guitarists there were most influential for me in my life. Not necessarily the ones that I think are the greatest, although I think they're pretty fucking great. I got Jimi Hendrix, of course. That was my number one. Now, granted, I love plenty more guitarists, but these are the four that impacted me the most here. Jimi Hendrix being number one, because that was when I first started getting into guitar and just like, this guy's fucking the bee's knees. Because, you know, he was pretty fucking awesome. And then Tony Iommi was number two. And, you know, this is fucking Tony Iommi's, you know, band, Black Sabbath. Already great. We've got one already starting off. You know, I knew that one of the four was going to be there at the concert. but anyway, I've got three of the four of my Mount Rushmore. Of course, Tony Iommi, Adam Jones of Tool, and Tom Morello of Rage Against the Machine. And it should be noted, I mean, it was also to see those two share the stage together. Unfortunately, I didn't get Tony Iommi with them out there. You know, but, you know, Tony's in his 70s. Probably took a lot out of him just to perform those four songs. A little difficult, you know? And anyway, would have been sweet to have those three together. There's no way to get Hendrix in there unless maybe they're going to do some kind of like, I don't know, hologram. Maybe play to a Hendrix recording. Then you could have I don't know what song you'd have those three perform together with. That would be a Hendrix song, but Machine Gun, maybe? I don't know. I don't know why. It'd have to be some pretty crazy Hendrix song. I don't know what you would... Yeah, I don't know what you would do for those. Like, Hendrix doesn't seem like a good mix for those fellas. Man, it would have been great to see all three of those guys on stage. Anyway, the point I was getting to, Tom Morello, Adam Jones, you know, I've known forever at this point, but they, their first band, they were in a band together in high school called the Electric Sheep. And this show, back to the beginning, was the first time they've played on a stage together since fucking high school. So we're talking like, I'm guessing they went to the high school in like the early 80s-ish or so. Sometime in the 80s. Early mid 80s-ish. And so it's been like 40 years or close to it probably since... These two megaliths in the guitar stratosphere have played together, and it was pretty awesome seeing those two. I was hoping to see a more shine. It seemed like KK Downing was getting like the more impressive parts there. I mean, he's rocking that wah pedal and everything. I would love to see a chance. There's to see some other event where Adam Jones and Tom Morello play again together. Like, that's... which it seems like they're still good friends. I imagine they've, you know, toured together, you know, via, you know, Rage or Audio Slave and Tool. I'm sure that they've been, at least at, you know, big concerts like this in the past. But I'm wondering if, you know, after this show, like, they realize, oh, that was fun. We gotta get back on a stage together. Or maybe, hell, maybe record a track or something, you know? Throw some shit down. But yeah, that was definitely one of the highlights for me. The best moments, of course, were having Ozzy out there, which Axl Rose might sing like shit, but Ozzy can still sing. Can't apparently walk because the Parkinson's has really fucked him up. But man, he was still able to, fucking sing, man. It was, and he went immediately from, solo Ozzy stuff with only a slight break, before Black Sabbath hitting the stage. but yeah, I thought it was sad. And hearing his like emotional speech and what have you, it was really funny. If you haven't seen it, I forgot the name of the guy, but from Slipknot. But there's of course Kelly Osbourne, Ozzy's daughter. Kelly has been seeing, I believe, for several years, one of the members of Slipknot, and. Backstage at the Back to the Beginning where he started proposing to her, and that's a great viral like moment where Ozzy's just like, oh, you're not fucking marrying my daughter. It was just fucking, and of course they all just start laughing, you know, it's fucking so fucking Ozzy. For fuck's sake, fucking. I've been going back through and like watching like old Ozzy shit too, and just love watching like hear him talk about this just crazy shit that's basically his life. And I was listening to an interview from him from like 1981, and this is, you know, he's already gone solo at this point and met up with Randy Rhoads, and this is like peak craziness of Ozzy, where, you know, this is, I think he's already probably bitten the head off the bat, or at least the doves. I remember the bat for some reason, that I kind of forgot about the doves. I forgot he also bit off two heads of doves. But I was listening to the interview earlier where he's just talking about basically a day in the life of fucking Ozzy Osbourne at that moment. And it like he's at that point he was like constantly getting arrested for being drunk and doing just fucked up shit. But like, oh, yeah, that ultra British accent where you just can't fucking understand half the shit he's talking about. there's something great to that. But anyway, yeah, the concert, though, I mean, it was one funny moment was like I was not expecting Bill Ward to take, you know, Bill Ward, he was, you know, 70 something. Not in peak physical condition, I got to say. Bill Ward has looked better in his younger days. He took his shirt off after the first Sabbath song. I was like, holy shit, did this old fuck really take his shirt off? And Bill's got some boobs. As I believe Tony, I read in an interview after the fact, it said that he did look like Gollum from Lord of the Rings, which he kind of did. My brat, my precious. Yeah, it was pretty funny to see that. Because I was just not expecting that. You know, apparently Bill Ward was all about that pretty much all the time. It is, I guess, kind of cool that still this old guy, you know, still gonna rock out. I don't give a fuck what you think, what I look like. And just there's some pretty great, good stuff to that. And it was one funny thing, not only just watching him play the songs shirtless, which I got to say, I love Bill Ward. Even though I was a little surprised to see to see him shirtless. Anyway. The funny stuff was like after the show was over, and I saw some footage and clips of stuff of another great musician that was there at the show, which I was surprised. You know, there was at least two Slipknot members there. I'm guessing Corey Taylor probably had some Stone Sour or some kind of solo shit. You know, he was probably the one that, you know, prevented Slipknot from playing at this show. I was surprised that they weren't there. I mean, again, you have two, Eloy Casagrande and the one that's going to marry Ozzy's daughter, whatever his name is. He's not one of the ones I know that well and without a mask. Like if I saw his mask and be like, oh, he's that one. Basically, Corey Taylor, Eloy Casagrande, and Jim Root are like the only ones I really know that what they look like without a mask. anyway, Eloy Casagrande, his hero is fucking Bill Ward, which why wouldn't it be? But he met with Bill Ward after the last Sabbath performance. And there's Bill Ward still shirtless. And you got Eloy Casagrande just crying, man. Just he's meeting fucking Bill Ward. Man, if I met Bill Ward, I'd probably get pretty... I was pretty emotional. Just honestly, I was weeping a little bit watching that final performance, man. It was hard not to. I was getting all man. As I get older, I'm just more. Anyway, of course, as a kid, you know, I cried watching Big and and the Christian Slater Marissa Tomei flick. Untamed Heart, which. If I watched that again today, I'm sure I'd probably cry again. Anyway, it was pretty great seeing Eloy Casagrande break down like with Bill Ward looking like Gollum. uh, That did, I tell you what, that did like keep my mind off the emotional aspect of it and just, you know, got me to calm down a little bit. Just seeing Bill Ward like that. Thanks, Bill Ward. But yeah, there was great performances. After the live stream stopped, I guess a couple hours after the concert had ended, I don't remember how long it took, but they of course did have it to where you could watch all of the concert again, and I was able to go back and watch most of it. I watched most of it. Again, it was like 10 hours. I kind of skipped around parts. Bands that I wasn't too concerned about. It was cool seeing the... there was a song where there was a bit of... basically a drum off between Travis Barker, who I thought did a really good job. I'm not like a big Blink-182 fan. Or, you know, I could give or take. It's not that I hate them. I just, you know... impartial, I guess. I'm Sweden in this. I'm neutral. Or Switzerland, whatever. I thought Travis Barker did a really good job. There's the drama between Travis Barker, Chad Smith of Red Hot Chili Peppers, and Danny fucking Carey. Which I would have thought, you know, Danny Carey would have just destroyed Travis Barker, but Travis Barker held his own. And, Tool, of course, was a highlight, but it's weird seeing Tool outside of a Tool concert, because I'm used to the Tool experience, you know, as in like Tool concerts are just massive light shows and like they've got all kinds of videos and it's very much, you don't see the band as much. And I imagine it's very weird for them to play outside of that element when they're, you know, playing together, you know, other than, you know, I'm sure, I mean, they play, you know, practice outside of that environment. But doing shows like that, it's got to be a little different, which they do sometimes do, you know, smaller venues and whatnot, mix a couple of those in with their tour schedule. Which, again, they don't, like, pull out the full light show and everything for the smaller venues. But it was a different experience seeing them just... they seem so much smaller at that event. And I want to say Tool covered Supernaut is the Black Sabbath song that they went with. I could be off. I know they did perform 46 and 2 and did Enema. But, yeah, man, there was so many good acts. Gojira was really fucking good. What I saw of Slayer, I didn't watch all of the Slayer, but I mean, it's fucking Slayer. Slayer, the front man of Slayer kills me. He just seems like this is a fucking Muppet version of front man. He's like, I like me some Slayer. But, and man, they were fucking tight from what I saw. I mean, they were just fucking... I need to go back and watch like their full set. I did watch all of Gojira's full set, but I only had till like Monday, like while I would have been at work, to really watch all the concert. So, you know, I didn't have like 10 hours to fucking kill. Basically... So, which, you know, was basically Sunday I had to watch it. All the rest of it, which I had seen, I had live streamed at least several hours of it at the end, like from Guns N' Roses until Black Sabbath performed their final set was at least a few hours. Of course, I think, if I remember correctly, the lineup, it went Guns N' Roses, then Metallica, and then that then came out Ozzy with Zakk Wylde, and of course, Black Sabbath. But yeah, it was a great show. It was a great show. And shit, I need to get a drink. I'm a bit parched. Pause for just a second. And I'm back, which I guess you would have never have known that I even paused if I wouldn't have mentioned it. But I guess on to the next thing, which speaking of music, one of the bigger things that has happened in this last week for me is, well, there was a guitar that had come back in stock at Sweetwater that I had, I guess you could say, pre-ordered. Or reserved, rather. I got the message from my Sweetwater rep, Cam, the other day that the Blueberry ES Supreme that I was interested in had come back in stock. And was I still interested in ordering it? And, well, to the left of me... is a ES Gibson ES Supreme in Blueberry Burst. And I received that Thursday? Yeah, it was Thursday. I had to think about it. Yeah, it's Thursday. I had received that. And actually, honestly, I thought about calling into work because I knew it was coming in that day. I was like, yeah, maybe I should just go and play hooky, use some sick time. But I didn't. I didn't because I felt that there was a good chance that we were going to make our production bonus for that day, and I didn't want to lose out on that money. Turns out we made about half of production bonus, so I made $45 of the $90. Thought I would make, so I wouldn't have made any of that. I called in sick, so better than a fat goose egg. But anyway, I had the guitar delivered to my house and not signed. I could have set it up to where I had to sign for it, but I didn't do that. It's pretty crazy to have that kind of a guitar. I was a little worried, but I felt pretty confident that I don't think any of my neighbors are going to steal the package. And that's basically all that's, I would presume, the only people that are really coming down the street are my neighbors and or somebody that knows my neighbors. Although, I did get an egg. Somebody hit my garage door with an egg before. So there has been vandalism that, gives me slight concern that there might be, it may not be a good idea. To have something like that just dropped off my house and sit there for a while. It ended up sitting at my door for like 2 hours. It was dropped off at 1:30, delivered at 1:30. I got off at 3:30, so it sat out there for 2 hours. But it was still there when I got home, so that's a plus. I should have called in, really. But, yes, I've got the guitar, and, it's my best guitar. I've, played it a fair amount since receiving it Thursday. Again, I've been, dealing with like drywall situation and whatnot and, other things. I haven't ran since Tuesday. I'm really, kind of sucks. I should get out and do at least a short run, but probably I'm not going to do that. Maybe tomorrow. I'm going to see Superman later and doing more shit with the drywall and what have you. So anyway, the ES Supreme. It's, yeah, I mean, it is definitely... the best guitar that I have, and I still love my other Gibsons and a few of the other guitars, whatever. I haven't sold my Epiphone Riviera yet, the Noel Gallagher one. I intend to do that at some point. That's going to be more of just whenever if I get out to do it, because man, it is a world of difference between this ES Supreme and that Riviera. It is so much better. All the issues that I had with Riviera, which I've played a lot, not completely like knocking it. I've enjoyed it to an extent. But I didn't really care for the pickups, which is a big part of an electric guitar, even though, you know, you can, you know, mod it out, just swap out some pickups. Didn't care for the pickups. But I'm usually not a fan of most of the Epiphone pickups anyway. Not really surprised there. Though, you know, Epiphone does have their more expensive line that they're doing now, like the inspired by Gibson line of guitars. And the Dave Grohl, the DG335, I believe has the Epiphone, one of those, has the actual Gibson pickups in it, the Burst Buckers. Which I wanted a guitar. I wanted Burst Buckers. That's what I wanted. I want that sound, you know. I want the Grohl-esque sound. And the Alnico Classic, I think, is what is in the Noel Gallagher Epiphone Riviera, I want to say. Don't quote me on that. But I wasn't a fan of the pickups. Not a fan of the tuning keys on there. I like the look of the guitar as far as the color wise. Like that dark wine red is a nice color. And the neck profile. I'm not a fan of the neck profile. Like, it's okay in the frets, you know, like 1 through 7 or 9. But you get to around 9 and below, like you go to like you know, the 12th fret and everything. There's just some, it. I don't like the neck there. It's playing songs like "The Pretender" by the Foo Fighters. There, there's that arpeggiated bit at the beginning. That I don't know. I have a hard time fretting it on that guitar. Just I end up bending the string. Just the neck profile is just weird. I don't even know how to describe it, but I end up, when I fret that chord out at the beginning to like do the arpeggio bit, I end up fucking bending the strings weird and not supposed to be bending at all. Except for that one little bend in it. But this ES Supreme, I gotta say, it is like a baseball bat of a neck. And I'm digging it. And I've had no problems fretting out in that part of the fretboard. And tuning keys, I mean, they're locking Grover tuners with the Keystone bits, not the kidney bean. I don't like the kidney bean ones. Those are fucking terrible. The Keystone's the way to go. I'm not a fan. The only like thing I'm not real crazy about on the guitar is it does have a lot of gold on there, as far as the tuning keys are gold, the pickup covers are gold, and the bridge and what have you. I would have preferred silver or nickel, which did make, like, I watch the Gibson mod shop usually about once a week because they update it every Wednesday. And they've had a few of these ES Supremes on there, not the Blueberry Burst, but, you know, they do one-off colors where they'll repaint it and what have you. And they've had some really cool ones for the ES Supremes. And it was tempting to just wait for one to appear on the mod shop that I really liked. But I've been a fan of most of the Blueberry Bursts I've seen. I wanted to get a Blueberry. I don't know. It's just although that particular Burst seems to vary a lot from one to the next, so wasn't really sure. But I think I can get over the gold. It doesn't look too bad on there. I would have really preferred it to be chromed out. Some chrome. Chrome dome! But there's quite a bit of figuring on there. It's a flame top on it. One of the coolest things about having a Gibson ES guitar is that there's the hydraulic press they use to form the wood. And it's the same fucking press on all the ES I'm pretty sure that's the same as the ES-335 body, 345, 355. All of those guitars have been pressed in the same press. All the Gibson ones have been same. They've used the same exact press. It's been inside that, regardless of where Gibson was located at the time, like Kalamazoo, Michigan. You know, it's currently in the USA, I guess, is in Nashville, and then the custom shop, I want to say, is in Memphis, which this one would have been in Nashville, but either way, which I think even maybe the custom shop, like, maybe sends them, I don't know, either way, they use the same press to press all of these, so the point is, my guitar was pressed in the same press, the same machinery made it that made, think of basically any player that played an ES style guitar, whether it be, you know, Chuck Berry or Marty McFly himself, the missing Back to the Future guitar. Was pressed on the same fucking press as mine. So in a way, it's like I've touched, well, not exactly. I was going to say touch Marty McFly's. They got it. It pressed it before that it was into those people's hands, but it's pretty awesome that still that machinery, you know, that made that same magic is magic in my hands. And this is, it is out of the box, man. It is it's played quite nicely. And I am so glad too. I was concerned that I'd get it and be like, you know what, this neck profile, that's the worst thing about fucking ordering guitars online, is that you know, you don't know if you're really gonna, I mean, if I knew what the measurements and everything were on guitars where I like the neck profile, it would help out immensely. But honestly, I don't know it. I just know that when I pick it up and I play it and be like, yeah, that feels good. I got to say, I'm really excited that feels good. Because again, you know, I got the Epiphone Riviera, and yeah, I'm not real crazy about it. I need to go sell that. Hopefully I can get, you know, I'm hoping to at least get like 600 or so out of it. 600 to 700. It's like sells 900 brand new. So I'm hoping, you know, I haven't done anything major. There might be a ding or two in there, but it's not, and nothing major. So I'm hoping, yeah, get some cash out of it. And then I can pay for part of this guitar. Because as of right now, I haven't paid a single dime, really. I just owe them a lot of money. Which actually reminds me, I'll need to remember, I don't know what date I'm going to have to make my first payment. I might want to look that up. That's kind of an important thing. I will be paying on this guitar for years to come. This is the most expensive guitar I have. And, July 26th. I got to remember. Oh, I figured it would be a little bit... I thought I had like a month after I bought it, but I guess not. Yeah. Either way, I got the cash. It's not a not a big deal. But yeah, I'll need to remember July 26th, which actually I think that might just be figured from the first time I had made a purchase with my Sweetwater card, and then it just kept that date. I don't really recall, honestly. It's good I looked that up beforehand. Oh yeah, because my musician's friend, which I only had, bought the Adam Jones guitar with that. My payments, I guess, I always do on the 13th. So I just need to remember the 26th. Got a couple weeks at least. But yeah, I'm going to be paying on that. I have to pay, as long as I pay, was $128 a month for, I guess it's like a little over 3 years, whatever it is, 4 years. I don't know. But as long as I do that, I won't have to pay any interest. So that's you know, that's the deal. So I won't be overpaying, I guess, for the guitar. And I feel like this guitar will hold its value, and actually gain in value. I don't think they produce that many of these. It's not like at least as large of a run as the Tony Iommi SG I have, or the Adam Jones Les Paul. I think these are a little bit more limited as far as that. I mean, it's not like one of 100. But, you know, the more limited a guitar is like that, of course, the more it will go up in value, of course, over time. But I don't... Things are going to have to get bad for me to sell that. It's something. It's something special. And I'm just glad that... I have yet... As far as playing is concerned, I've had nothing that I dislike about it as far as that's concerned. Again, you know, I just minor things appearance-wise, like with the gold, mainly like just the gold hardware. But I've already gotten over that. Although the more I talk about it, have I? I could always... replace the hardware if I really wanted to. I don't see that happening. Because, you know, again, it's... I'd have to go all Gibson products for that. And it's going to be a little costly to do that. But again, as in comparing to the price of the guitar, not really, I guess. Not that big of a thing. I really don't want to put different tuning keys on there. But if I just went with... silver or chrome rather, you know, theoretically the holes would be in the same spot, so all I would have to do is undo the screws and then re-screw them back in there. But I don't really want to do that on a guitar like that, especially while I owe money on it. I don't think I'll be doing any kind of things while I still owe money on it. It feels weird, you know, I'm basically like renting it at this point. The other guitars, well, I still wouldn't want to do. Although I did do one little thing to the Adam Jones, or two things rather. I did put the pointers on the speed knobs so you can tell what number you're at on that, which this ES Supreme has those already on there. And on the Adam Jones, I did put the diamond strap buttons on there. Or not diamond, but yeah, get. Because it's sort of diamond shaped. That was on the old like 70s Les Pauls, which are really cool. I got one from the original Kalamazoo like run of those. And I did put those on there because, I mean, they're cool. And that's what's on the Adam Jones custom model and the Epiphones, but not the Les Paul standard fuckers. As far as other things on the guitar, I mean, I like the ES Supreme rather. I really like the pickups on it. There you have the Birstbucker Pros in there. Gibson Birstbucker Pro. Birstbucker? God damn it. Birstbucker Pros. It does. You can split... It was a split coil where you can pull the knob up and then it sounds like a single coil pickup as opposed to a humbucker. I don't really care for that. It doesn't seem... Again, I haven't really put it through all of the... I haven't played it that much and messed with like the tone controls with it. You know, there might be certain times I might want... to have more of a single coil sound, but I really don't feel that part is absolutely necessary. And does sound great acoustically. Because again, it is a semi-hollow guitar. It's got that... It's pretty. It looked really nice. Whenever I open any Gibson, I record me just opening the case for the first time. Not the look on my face. I don't get the look on my face, but I just get me opening it. I'll put a record on and open her up. But which I guess when I got the Adam Jones, I didn't have a record on because I don't even know that I had. I didn't have a record player yet. That's right. I did not have a record player yet. There was nothing downstairs, basically. There wasn't jack shit down there. I think I did already mount the TV on the wall. There was a TV mounted on the wall, but there was no fucking furniture. I put it on the countertop in the kitchen there and opened it from there. I don't even think I had a tool playing. I tried to, like, I was like, ooh, I'm going to have a unboxing video. And just, I tried to do voiceover to it. And I was like, it didn't turn out well. But I still have the video, you know, of me opening it for the first time. Because that one, I was super excited. It was my first ever Gibson. It was my first experience, you know. And, this one, though, I played Beatles song Get Back on record and opened it to that and had it on my lava table downstairs. And I got to say, the guitar looked nice taking pictures of it on that table. And, of course, I forgot to mention another thing that Jackman had helped me with. I got my real pendant light, the light fixture that I was replacing in the dining room there. It is the 35 millimeter film roll that they turned into a light. And I really like it. I really like it. Jackman helped me install that. And I had that above the guitar when I took pictures of it. But that light's pretty cool. I figured it probably wasn't going to be as bright as the chandelier that was down there, which I was not a fan of. And they had it set way too low. Walking under it, there was no walking under it unless you had, like, fucking bent over. It's just so out of place, too, in that dining room. The dining room's not big at all. Like, there's no point to have a big-ass fucking chandelier in there. There's just no fucking point whatsoever. And so I was never fond of it, but you know what? I didn't, before I had a nice table down there, or any table at all, rather, and there was no furniture, I really just didn't give a shit. I didn't spend that much time downstairs, so it wasn't high up on the things to do, but once I got the table and then started to transform everything into a movie theater down there, I realized, you know what? I have to get a better light fixture and one that's not going to run my head into. So we hooked that light fixture up the other day and got it to where I can just walk right under it now. It had a really long cord to it. Could have set it to where it was like touching the fucking table, but we got it set to where I can walk right under it. And the previous light fixture, there was what, like 5 or 6 lights on that thing. And because of that, it filled the room with quite a bit of light. And it would hit light into the living room area. And with having the projector in there now, that's not, you don't want that. You don't want that if you're going to, like, because I've taken to eating at the dining room table now. And, you know, I want to be able to watch shit on the projector while I'm eating in the dining room. And you don't want to turn on the dining room light if it's going to just fucking make it harder to see the projector. So this light has got one light, which the light bulb's like 110 volts. So it's a pretty bright light bulb, but it shines directly down. It doesn't like radiate out the sides. So there's only a small area in which it really lights up, but it does not hit light on the projector screen. It fucking worked out quite nicely. I did end up ordering a lamp for that room because, again, it doesn't light up the dining room that well. It lights up the table really well for the most part. Like, there's, like, it's not centered on the table, so it's more towards one end of it. So I went ahead and ordered a lamp for moments like if I'm going to play any kind of board games down there and we need to read some shit, I'm going to need a little bit more lighting in there. I'm going to put a lamp in the corner, which I should get next Wednesday. It is a... It looks like a light from, like, say, like the 1950s that you'd find on a movie studio set. So yeah, that should be pretty cool. Definitely, I don't know how bright that's going to be either, but at least I can position it, you know, and put the light exactly where I want it. And really, I just thought, like, having it in the one corner of the room and being able to just put light, more light onto whatever segment of the table. And I did also, there was another purchase because we had Amazon Prime days. It wasn't more than one day. It was like 8th through the 11th. And so I went ahead and they had a popcorn machine that usually goes for like 300 something on Amazon, and I got it for like 150. Which I had kind of gone back and forth whether or not I wanted a popcorn machine. But really, I'm not that keen on popcorn and probably won't use it that much. Really, I just thought, like, if I had some people over, you know, it'd be cool to, you know, just make some popcorn if I had a movie night. From what I understand, they're a real pain in the ass to clean out. So there's even more reason for me not to want to use it. But I just thought it would look really good with the decor to have that in there. And, I haven't set that up yet. I'm going to wait until till I have... everything cleaned up downstairs after I finish doing all the painting. Then I can clear off my countertops again. I probably should have paid more attention to just how big this thing was, because the idea was I wanted to just put one on my countertop. I'm thinking this thing might be too big for my counter. It might be a little too big. The box is pretty big. I'm hoping there's a lot of styrofoam in there, and that, I probably should have looked at the measurements and really measured the countertop to make sure that that works, because now I might be kind of fucked and have to get a small table to put that, which I'm sure I could get a table for that to sit on, like, fairly cheaply. Without anything too crazy. But, you know, downside to that is it's going to take up some real estate. And there's just not a whole lot of real estate in, like, the dining room area. Especially putting a lamp in the corner. But we'll see what happens. You know, I'll figure something out. But I have a popcorn machine now. So movie night will be even more of an event now. We'll I can't. I'm just really looking forward to finally having all of the painting done. As the hallway now, I guess, is ready. Although there's still some spots I could touch up with some mud that are not affiliated with the area that Jackman had. Done the patching. That area, he's got that really nice. It looks fucking great. But there's areas where I spackled a little bit and I didn't bother to sand. at least need to sand. There's some other spots on the wall that I might want to just patch up a little bit. But I'm close to being able to finish. The painting's still going to take a while. I got quite a bit of painting, and now I'm gonna have to, you know, finish the drywall up here in the upstairs too now, and paint that. got the old parts torn out, at least, and I cut two pieces of drywall, and I hung those myself, which I did not do a good job of. The one on the sidewall, I didn't even bother putting screws in because there's a bit of an issue where it seems like there's quite a bit of thickness difference between the drywall that is on the wall as opposed to the piece that I put on there. I am not an expert at drywall, so Jackman's going to end up having to help me with that. And the one I hung on the ceiling wasn't a thickness difference, but man, I wasn't able to sink the screws in very much. Because I was by myself when I was hanging it, and it was a bit of a bitch to get the one to hang that on the ceiling. And I pushed my head. I used my head to hold it up. First, I had the ladder too far away, and then I fucking missed the stud with putting the screw in the first time. I fucked it up a little bit. We may end up having to cut a different piece to put up there because of what I did. But yeah, we might end up having shit. We might have to do something different with those pieces. But at least I did the part where I cut out the old shit, and that was a big mess. There was all kinds of shit, you know, I had to throw away, and made quite the mess. The model caused a mess too. But at least we don't have to tear any more shit out. There's not going to be a bunch. I'm not going to make several trips to the dumpster. But we're getting close. We're getting close to finishing the movie theater. So that's exciting. And, I'm sure I'm going to be playing plenty more guitar now. So, that's really all I've got. So as always, that is a kid in a wheelchair, not a trash can.